Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, welcome back. It is interesting. You know, one of the stories, I closed this in the last part of the 2 o'clock hour. I closed with this, and this is sort of breaking right now. It's going to be well timed for Ian Sheeran in a couple of minutes from CNET. The CEO of Parler is basically admitting that nobody wants to host his website. So that would be a problem. He said yesterday that there were plenty of people that wanted to host the website. He had to basically admit no one wants to host the website. They're being essentially shut down. So, you know, is that a slippery slope or not? We'll talk about it. Ian's got some thoughts coming up. But there is a lot of panic out there. And you have even companies like Hallmark in Kansas City asking for Josh Hawley to return the campaign donation that they gave to him. So there's all kinds of things that are going on. And then there's this. And yeah, I hesitate to do this, but I suppose I should address it just a little bit, because you heard, well, maybe you didn't. If you didn't hear the interview, I guess I would suggest that you would listen to the 220 interview this afternoon with Michael Phillips from the Wall Street Journal about this guy, Doug Sweet, who is one of the QAnon kooks that was there last week. And they talked to him, and he lays out his opinions and, you know, explains his conspiracy theories and all that. But, you know, I think what's happening right now is, and I said this last hour, you don't want to label everyone. I'm not trying to do this. Not everyone who has questions about election fraud are QAnon conspiracy freaks, but there are a lot of them out there right now. And there are people, and this is what's going around. I just tweeted this a few minutes ago. There are people that think, and I encountered this sort of in person on Friday. I went to a local business on Manchester Road, and there was a friend of mine who's the owner that was having a conversation with a customer. And after that, I said, well, what's all that about? And she's like, oh, yeah, she thinks that Trump is still going to be president on the 20th. So this is being shared by people today. Now, I did hear earlier, and I haven't heard anything about this. I heard that the president was going to speak today, but he wasn't going to speak about what happened last week. He was going to talk about some of the social media stuff. And that really hasn't developed. But there is a post that's going around, and people are sharing it, saying that the president's going to address the nation tonight at 8 o'clock. It's not a rally. It's a speech. It's an address to the nation where he is, that's in capital letters, so you know it's true, going to give and lay out the evidence, that's also in capital letters, so you know it has to be true. So those who have not heard, or you've been hidden from the whole truth, apparently that's me, you get to hear all the details about the fraud and corruption tonight. One problem, let's say that even that was true, let's say the president was planning on going on national television, no one's going to carry the speech. Well, I guess Newsmax would, or OAN, but I don't even know if Fox would carry it at this point. Dave, let's play Arnold here this afternoon, because this was everybody. I mean, I don't know what I think about this, but I do think that there are personal stories and people are reacting to this. This is why there's been so much blowback from most people in this country from last week, even most Republicans. Look, I was thinking about this over the weekend. I think if the election were held tomorrow, same election, same two candidates, that Joe Biden would probably get anywhere from 10. Well, maybe not, though. Let me put it this way. Trump would get about 10 to 15 million fewer votes than he did on Election Day. Maybe more than that, actually, from people that would just say after they saw what happened on Wednesday. This is just sort of, you know, me having an opinion of what would happen. We'll never be able to prove this, right? I think a fair amount of people would not vote for the president who did. They wouldn't vote for Biden, necessarily. That's why I had to check myself on the on the math there. But I think there have been enough people that have thought, well, you know, we're not down with this. Like Lindsey Graham said, I'm out, that we're not going to support this. But now everyone wants to weigh in. And some people do have personal connections, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Terminator and the former governor of California.
As an immigrant to this country, I would like to say a few words to my fellow Americans and to our friends around the world about the events of recent days. Now, I grew up in Austria. I'm very aware of Kristallnacht, or the Night of Broken Glass. It was a night of rampage against the Jews carried out in 1938 by the Nazi equivalent of the Proud Boys. Wednesday was the Day of Broken Glass right here in the United States. The broken glass was in the windows of the United States Capitol. But the mob did not just shatter the windows of the Capitol. They shattered the ideals we took for granted. They did not just break down the doors of the building that housed American democracy. They trampled the very principles on which our country was founded.
Okay, well, that's fine. But that also, what happened in Nazi Germany involved 300 synagogues that were burned down, 7,000 Jewish businesses destroyed, 30,000 Jews to concentration camps, and just that, you know, event alone and murder. So I'm never crazy about, and I think it was Jean Perrault on Fox who made some sort of Kristallnacht comparison today as well when it came to the social media clampdown. That just a good rule to keep the Nazi stuff out. And I know it's very tempting considering what happened last week, but that's probably a good rule of thumb. Dave, let's play Chris Christie here. You know, there are people that have, I'm fine, I'm all in on the 25th Amendment just because I think that the president could. Let me ask this question. Do you think this is over? You think the drama is over between now and next Wednesday? I don't. It's hard for me to believe that this is the last thing that's going to happen because we all sort of do that. We've done it for 4 years. Well, think about the Georgia elections last week. It was almost like they didn't happen because they got all the coverage got wiped off the media because of what happened on Wednesday. And, you know, so that's a weird situation because all of a sudden the insurrection, the attack on the Capitol took over. So is that the last thing that's going to happen? I think probably not. So that's where I come down on the side of the 25th Amendment because it's not realistic, but it's realistic. It wouldn't take much. The cabinet could vote. They could remove him if they really wanted to. Is that practical? No, it's not. Is impeachment practical? No, it's not. Is a criminal charge of incitement practical? Eh, I don't know. Maybe it is. I think you can make a pretty strong case. Here's the newly recovered COVID patient, Chris Christie, talking about this, about the incitement.
What we had was an incitement to riot at the United States Capitol. We had people killed. And to me, there's not a whole lot of question here. So, you know,
so you think it was an impeachable offense?
I've said before, Jordan. Oh, sure. Yeah. And
you'd vote to impeach.
I think that, you know, if I think it's an impeachable offense, that's exactly what I would do, George. But I'm not in there. But you want my opinion. That's my opinion. I think if inciting to insurrection isn't, then I don't really know what is. But I will say, too, that the Democrats, by what they did earlier on Ukraine, have kind of cheapened this a little bit, too. And I think that, you know, these are the type of actions which, you know, this mechanism was put into place for. I think a lot of Republicans at this point, I'm sure that Congressman Kinzinger is right, that there's some fear someplace, but I haven't heard it this week. What I've heard from fellow Republicans is that they've had enough and that the president's conduct, quite frankly, since then, has gotten them upset. I mean, it is a national disgrace, George.
Yeah, well, it's beyond a national disgrace. And Senator Blunt was on yesterday. Margaret Brennan faced the nation, and he talked about this. Dave, let's play the short one first. The comment about, well, actually, you know what? Let's play part of the longer bite here. We'll see how far we can get because we have to get to Ian here in just a couple of minutes. But this is the question about the president. Should he resign? What should happen? Impeachment? He tangled with her just a little bit. It was a good answer.
Well, it would be up to him, but my view would be what the president should do is now finish the last 10 days of his presidency.
So no. Your fellow Republicans have been quite critical, including Liz Cheney, including Mitt Romney, who called this an insurrection and said that the president was directly involved. Justice Department affidavits have individuals saying they came here because the president told them to. Is the president a danger to the country?
Well, I think the president's decisions and his actions that day and leading up to that day on this topic were clearly reckless. I said that very early in the evening on Wednesday, that this was a tragic day for the country, and the president had some had involvement in that.
Are Republican leaders going to hold him accountable in any way for it?
Well, I think the country is the right way to hold presidents accountable. The president should be very careful over the next 10 days that his behavior is what you'd expect from a leader of the greatest country in the world. Now, my personal view is that the president touched the hot stove on Wednesday and is unlikely to touch it again. And if that's the case, I think we get every day we get closer to the last day of his presidency. We should be thinking more about the first day of the next presidency than the last day of his presidency, in my view. And I'll be there on that day as the chairman of that event, seeing the new president sworn in. The President Trump says he's not coming. I hope Vice President Pence does. And I was proud to see the vice president step up as I was standing there right with him as one of the four members of Congress that count those electoral ballots and do what the law required us to do.
Right. But your fellow Missouri Senator Josh Hawley was on the other side of that. Do you think that he was complicit along with the five other senators who continued to propagate this lie that there could be a change to the outcome of the election on Wednesday?
Well, I only have one vote in the Senate, which is my vote. Now, I did the day Senator Hawley announced he'd be contesting those electoral votes, announced that I would not be. When Senator Cruz said he had a plan to put back in place a commission like the one formed in 1877, right. I said that wouldn't happen. I wasn't interested then or now in spending a lot of time on things that can't happen.
So
just
no sanction.
Just like the impeachment of the president to remove him from office, clearly is not going to happen between now and the last day he's in office.
So you don't. Well, and that's basically, and you know, so Margaret Brennan pushed him a little bit on that too, I suppose. But he's trying to come at this from a practical standpoint, which I think she didn't like very much yesterday on Face the Nation. All right, we'll take a break. Ian Scherer from CNET, some interesting ideas on how to police social media. And we'll get into the banning of President Trump and some of the other things that are going on as well. That's coming up next on KMOX.
The Mark Reardon Show, sponsored by Cantor Injury Law on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Welcome back. Mr. Wheeler's going to join me at 3:35. We'll run down some of the NFL stuff. And are we going to have college basketball back locally? Because it seems like these teams are on hold right now. Some new rankings out as well. Ian Scherer from CNET with me this afternoon. And there's a lot to talk about when it comes to big tech. How are you, Ian?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. So the breaking news in the last hour is that the CEO of Parler basically says that nobody wants to host our site. There's lawsuits, but also the law firm that represented them has dropped them as a client. So where does that leave Parler?
I mean, it's going to leave them at the moment kind of stuck in the water. One of the things that I think is really tough for some of the people who have kind of gone against the grain in the way Parler has is that the consequences when companies decide they don't want to work with you is that they tend to all move at once. We saw this also with the neo-Nazi website, the Daily Stormer. They suddenly had a bunch of different companies decide, you know what, we're not going to give you access to our stuff anymore. That's our right as companies to decide, and took them off. So we're starting to see that happen with Parler, and I'm curious to see what will happen next.
Well, and I want to get to you have some great ideas about what to do here with moderation for these platforms. But let's just talk about what's in front of us right now with what Facebook and Twitter did with the president and how the ACLU is responding and whether or not, you know, there's something we should think about when it comes to long-term consequences. Because I think when you act upon emotion, you know, everyone's like, yeah, ban him, let's get rid of him. But, you know, this is a slippery slope. So let's start there with your thoughts on the slippery slope argument.
You know, I think that part of the challenge we've had over the last 4 years in particular is that we've ended up with a situation where we have a world leader who is President Trump who uses Twitter in a way that actually violates a lot of its terms of service. There were a number of interesting experiences that I saw over the years where people actually copy-pasted literally exactly what he tweeted into their own Twitter and saw their accounts banned within days. And part of it is that the Twitter would say, look, he might be breaking our rules, but he's a world leader. You should have access to his thoughts, right? That's what he wants to do. The challenge that I think the tech industry is hitting now is that they are realizing that it's not just mouthing off on Twitter. It actually had real-world consequences. Five people are dead, including a Capitol Hill police officer. And a lot of people are pointing to the tech industry as having given people the tools to cause this to happen.
So when you wrote a column that was interesting, and I'll just kind of put it in real terms, and you tell me how they deal with this. So if I am being harassed on Twitter, which occasionally, as you might imagine, I am. So I did this last week, and I don't do it very often because usually people are, you know, if they're saying something that's not abusive or threatening, I don't really care. Just ignore them. But when it gets into the abusive territory, every once in a while I might want to take action. So there was one person in particular, and before blocking them, I sent the, I sent the alert to Twitter. I think it was Twitter in this case,
right,
saying, look, you know, or I'm reporting this person for abusive behavior, whatever it was. So when I do that, what happens?
So when you report someone, first off, you should know Twitter and Facebook largely, and YouTube largely, do not actually police their platforms. They expect you and me and everyone else to do it for them. So what happens is that you and I will flag something, for example, and it's sent to a team of people who work at these companies. And these are tens of thousands of people. It's insane. It's like huge floors filled with people who are just looking at the worst parts of the Internet all day long. And they decide whether or not it actually violated the terms of service or not. If it did, it gets struck down. If it didn't, it leaves up. And I've tested this many times. I remember that back a few years ago, there was a group on Facebook that I stumbled upon that had images glorifying the death of police officers. That is directly against Facebook's rules. I reported it. They responded back saying that it did not rise to the level of being deleted.
Interesting. All right, so that brings us to your thoughts here and ideas, because what's happening right now, taking the president out of the mix probably, is not working.
Right. And this is part of the thing, is that I honestly, the debate about President Trump, I think, is kind of, it doesn't matter after a week from now. Like, that's not the issue. The issue is how we handle the extremism that we've run across on the Internet. And you can tie it to him or not, whatever, I don't care. What's important now is that we are in a situation where the Internet is being used broadly to inspire violent events, to actually recruit people into extremism. The QAnon conspiracy, the guy with the horns that was on Capitol Hill, he was a QAnon. He was a very well-known QAnon conspiracy person. And it's those types of things that I think are really dangerous. So, you know, I don't want one person deciding what's good and bad, right? It's bad enough with Mark Zuckerberg. I don't like what he's doing. I don't think he likes what he's doing. And so what I propose, and I've written about this on CNET, is that we stop letting Facebook and Twitter moderate their platforms. We take all those thousands of people, we put them under an independent organization, and we let the organization actually figure this stuff out, like a justice system for the Internet. And the thing is, we already figured it out, right? It works today with the federal government and the state governments. We have a working judicial system. It's not perfect, but it's better than nothing. And I think that doing something similar on the Internet would at least be a good start and a solution to what we're in now, which is a huge mess that doesn't actually get fixed.
But you're not talking about having the government involved in that body, are you?
Not at all. No.
Yeah. Just to be clear.
I'm not that dumb. No, I don't want the government involved in this at all. What I want is an independent organization where it's not one person. It's a tribunal or a Supreme Court, whatever you want to call it, right? It needs to be a bunch of people who make decisions as a group, because that is what we've learned is what works in the judicial system. And I think also what's important here is that the one thing the government can do to help, we've been hearing a lot about Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. I won't go into details, but one of the things the government can do is they can rewrite that law to say, if you don't meaningfully moderate your platform, you lose all legal protections, which means they could be sued for anything anyone writes on their service. And the only way they would be able to protect themselves is to either meaningfully moderate on their own or join this judicial system I'm suggesting we set up. And look, I'm not saying I'm the only way to do it, but I've heard so few ideas that I threw
might as well get another
there,
one out. Yeah, get something out there that's an idea. Now, I want to explain it in this terms on the Communications Decency Act. So, and you know, tell me if I'm getting any of this wrong interpretation wise.
Sure.
But if I say something on the radio and it ventures into dangerous territory or vulgarity or indecency, then my radio station can be fined by the FCC. The FCC can get involved. With
right.
Twitter and Facebook, they're essentially like AT&T. If we have a conversation on the phone, they cannot be held responsible for that. That's kind of how I've heard it described in the past. Is that somewhat accurate?
That's a great way to describe it. And the thing is that freedom has given the internet the opportunity to grow into one of the largest economies and also one of the most influential things that has ever happened on Earth. So, yay, right? But we're three decades in. We're now at this situation where, you know, take your pick of whatever word you want to call it, right? Fascism, extremism, whatever is really growing. And again, I'm not including Trump here. Like, this is a problem broadly. And
I think
what we need to acknowledge is that, look, I totally respect free expression and free speech. The thing is that we have limits on those things already. We say that you can't incite violence. We say that we have rules against slander and libel, right? Those are not free speech. And I think that one of the things we need to do is seriously look at what is incitement to violence now, because a lot of people before January 6th said, oh, that's just people being Twitter. And it's not. We saw the result. These people were literally trying to target congressmen and kill them. That is, it's like, I think we've hit the point where we need to do something rather than debate it anymore.
Ian Scherr from CNET, obviously a conversation that's going to continue. I appreciate coming on here this afternoon. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me on.
We'll talk very soon because this is something that's not going to go away. Certainly, it's 3:30 at KMOX, and we have a national championship game tonight in college football. There seems to be not a lot of buzz on that, but we'll talk about that, the NFL playoffs, maybe some baseball chat with Kevin Wheeler coming up on KMOX after the news.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
You're still the one I run.
So I'm watching the NFL playoffs yesterday, and I think this was the game that was on ABC. And by the way, I'm the biggest NFL fan on the planet. I buy the DirecTV package, and every weekend when I try to find the NFL playoffs, I can't find them because this happens with Major League Baseball, too. You never know where the hell they are. But I'm watching this. Kevin Wheeler's with me this afternoon. Did you see the promo during the ABC broadcast that featured this song from Shania Twain? It was an NFL Network promo with Still the One from Shania Twain, which I have a theory on that, but I don't know if you had any reaction first and foremost, Mr. Wheeler.
I don't think I saw it, to be honest with you. I don't pay much attention during commercials, during games. I'm usually on my iPad then.
Blah, blah. I'm working. I'm tweeting.
Not working. I'm not working.
And I don't like Shania Twain either.
You're right. If Shania Twain had put out a headbanger, I might know it.
That's true. All right, but I just thought it was weird. But, you know, you did a couple of things yesterday, or the NFL did a few things yesterday, and Dave, I want you to jump in here. Dave and I watched part of the game. It was the Bears game, right? That was on Nickelodeon.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that the one that was on Nickelodeon?
Yeah, because they're in a partnership with CBS.
Yes.
Right. Right. So I watched that because I saw some people tweeting about it, and my daughter was in the room, and we do watch football with her. So we put on the Nickelodeon broadcast, which was fun. They were trying to explain the game to the kids, and they had slime and things like that. So that was, you know, and the same thing with the Shania Twain thing. I'm guessing they're trying to appeal to females. Whether that will work, I don't know. Or maybe they just like the song, Kevin. I'm not sure.
I don't understand half of the things they do with their musical choices, to be honest with you.
And then I got to play this just because it's been airing for weeks on NFL games. Kevin wouldn't be aware of it because he's too busy during the breaks. But this has to be one of the funniest commercials I've ever heard in my life. Dave, roll this one.
Life is full of challenges, but you don't have to pad thai them alone. If you're experiencing pad thai, there may be a way to help. The life you want is waiting.
I like what it gets in here.
Talk to your Pad Thai today to find out Pad Thai. Pad Thai is right for Pad Thai. Pad Thai.
Pad Thai could be right for you.
When all you could Pad Thai is think about, Postmates.
All right. Now, Wheeler, have you seen that?
Yes.
Have you seen that commercial? Okay. That's pretty funny because it instantly gets your attention. If you do look away from the TV, this is what's brilliant about that spot. You could be looking at your iPad, but all of a sudden you hear him say Pad Thai time and time again. You look up and you see it's actually for Postmates, the food delivery. I just like that. I thought it was funny.
I do, too. And I like the fact that they're taking pot shots at all of these commercials where, like, hey, here's a medication. Go ask your doctor if you need this medication. Like, shouldn't my doctor be telling me what I need?
Yes.
I don't need to be like, oh, wait, I got to write down all these things. I'm going to ask my doctor if I need this.
Well, that's what the pharmaceutical companies do. All right, so now we have – let's start with football here. We have the AFC playoffs, the NFC playoffs moving into next weekend. You have the oldest quarterback in the AFC playoffs, Baker Mayfield, at 25 years, 272 days. Patrick Mahomes is 25 years, 116 days. Jake Allen, 24 years, 235 days. Lamar Jackson, 24 years, 4 days. Meantime, in the NFC, those guys are on Medicare, right? They're
the
my
granddads.
Age.
Yeah, the gray beards. You get the gray beards on the NFC side, except the Rams. They don't have that. But the other guys are all the gray beards. So, yeah, that I find that to be fascinating. And I don't think it really tells us much of anything. I think it's just an interesting circumstance here when, you know, it tells us a bigger picture, Mark, about where the league is headed and that, you know, there was worry there for a while. You know, what's going to happen when Brady and Breeze and Rodgers and that generation moves on? And, well, now we know. We know who the guys coming up behind them are, and they're really good. There are a lot of quarterbacks in this league, Mark, that are 25, 26, and younger that are really good.
Okay, but if I'm now – I don't think Ben Roethlisberger is going to probably have the career into the 40s, whether he has even more career into the 30s next season or beyond that he does right now. But you do have – you can make a strong case with Aaron Rodgers, not quite in his 40s yet, but he's getting up there, and with Brady and Breeze, and I think this is going to be Breeze's last season, to say, look, you know, why can't you play into your 40s? These guys are getting to championship games, at least beyond wild card weekend, right?
Yeah, you know, the game has changed in favor of quarterbacks, right? They're not allowed to be hit as much. You can only hit them in certain areas. You know, the defensive rules when it comes to, like, defensive – not just pass interference, but, like, illegal contact down the field and all that. I mean, the game favors quarterbacks. And, you know, as long as you're not taking a beating all the time, there's no reason why these guys can't play until they're 40-plus. And it's not – I mean, this isn't unusual. I mean, Peyton Manning played along like that. Phillip Rivers is up there now and was just, you know, just eliminated this weekend. But he's still a playoff-level quarterback, too. So – I think that's what I'm excited about with this younger group is, man, you're looking at that, you're like, oh, it's not like five more years. I mean, you got another decade with a lot of these guys and more, maybe 15 years with some of these guys.
So I was wrapping some stuff up with dinner and with my daughter last night. Becky had gone down to the basement and the Steelers and the Browns had started. But then I noticed that 60 Minutes was on and I felt, well, and I knew I was going to watch it either this morning for the, you know, before the show, and I'm like, all right. So I got hooked in. I watched 60 Minutes. I go downstairs. It's 14-0 Browns, and I'm like, what? And then it got worse from there very, very quickly, although the Steelers did. I turned it off for a while, and I think with 10, maybe 11 minutes left, it was a 10 or 11-point game.
Yeah.
But look at the Browns with COVID players and no head coach. They get beyond that first weekend for the first time practically ever. Not quite ever,
pretty
but
close
certainly
to
a
it.
Long time.
Pretty close to it. I mean, in our lifetimes anyway, right? I mean, you know, this is a team that, you know, really was set up to fail, right? Your head coach isn't there. A couple of different – your top two starting corners are not there, and you're going up against a Steelers team that has a Hall of Fame quarterback and four legit wide receivers, not to mention a good tight end. Those guys put up fantasy numbers, all of them put up fantasy numbers for people all season long. And you get into this setting, and it shows you, Mark, how quickly it turned, because a lot of it turned – with a couple of Roethlisberger mistakes early, a couple of quick turnovers, and all of a sudden Cleveland's up. As you mentioned, it was 14-0 in a blink of an eye, and it was 28-0 at the end of the first quarter. And now this team that all of a sudden had a big problem is just now don't screw it up. If they don't turn it over, they're going to win, and that's what they did. They kept the football. I don't think they had a single turnover. Meanwhile, Pittsburgh had five turnovers.
Yeah, well. And I was glad from the perspective, and look, it's always a be careful what you wish for, because I think, and we talked about this last week, I think the Ravens are maybe one of the most dangerous teams right now.
Yeah,
they proved that
yesterday.
So I didn't really want them to face the Chiefs, although do you want to face the Browns right now? I mean, they're confident. They're playing well. I don't think it's quite their turn, so I'm pretty confident that Kansas City is going to win, but it's the NFL, and crazy stuff happens.
Yes, I would rather play Cleveland than play the Ravens. I mean, that's not even a question. The Ravens, not only are they playing well, but they've got a coaching staff and largely a defense. A lot of these guys have been through the playoff battles before, and they're perfectly comfortable doing it no matter what. And Cleveland, this is first time for everybody.
So what are your thoughts then just after the opening weekend with the matchups for next week? Because there were good games over the weekend, but yeah. I'm excited about next week and get to see the Chiefs and the Packers play, obviously.
I think at least three of the games look like they're going to be really competitive. I think the Ravens-Bills looks like it's going to be awesome. And there's a reason why the spread on that game is less than a field goal in Buffalo. So tells you how Vegas sees that game. The Saints are only a three-point favorite against the Bucs, and I actually like the Buccaneers in that matchup. Browns and Chiefs will probably be closer than the spread. I think the game that worries me about getting ugly is Packers-Rams, because the Rams have all kinds of problems at quarterback. You know, Goff has been banged up, and he was bad during the end of the regular season anyway. And then Wolford got hurt last week, so they're in a really bad spot. And the Packers are just a juggernaut. In fact, I feel about the Packers and the Chiefs right now, Mark, the same way I do about Alabama tonight. And if you're going to beat that team, you got to plan on scoring 35, 40 points, because those teams are going to score.
Well, it's kind of. I want to segue into the national championship game, but let me ask you one question about one more question about the NFL. Were you surprised Doug Peterson got fired by the Eagles today? And that wasn't. You know, obviously there were challenges there handling Carson Wentz, and I think we saw some things develop in the last few weeks that indicated that Jeffrey Lurie and Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz were not all on the same page. But that was a bit of a shocker to some folks.
You know, it isn't to me, but and I think it's ridiculous. I mean, it was, you know, 3 years ago, this time of year, they won the first Super Bowl in franchise history under Doug Peterson, and now all of a sudden, you know, he's the problem. And by the way, here's the thing: firing the coach is easier and cheaper than changing your roster. So if you're trying to hope to maybe get something more out of Carson Wentz, or you're trying to turn things around, it's a lot easier to try this first than it is to trade Wentz, because if you trade him, you've got like $35 or $40 million in dead cap money. How in the world are you going to compete with that big a percentage of your cap just dead money? So I understand it, but somebody else is going to hire him, and he's going to be a good coach somewhere else.
I'd like to see a competitive game tonight. Will I see that?
I think so.
I think so, too.
The bettors don't seem to think so, Mark. It was, you know, the opening point spread was 7.5 in favor of Bama. Now it's 9. So it's continued to go up. So everybody's pounding Alabama on this. And I think Bama wins. And actually, you know, they could end up pulling away late, because the problem with facing them is, just like I was talking about with the Packers and the Chiefs, you have to score 40 if you're going to beat them. If you look at Bama's games this year, even the really good teams they play, like Georgia is an excellent defensive team. They put up 41 on Georgia. They put up 52 on Texas A&M. That's a top five team at the end of the regular season. The only team in the regular season they scored less than 40 against was Mizzou in the opener. And I think that was partly because Bama was just not trying to run it up too much early. And then obviously Notre Dame, they scored 31, but that's partly because they stopped trying in the fourth quarter because they had such a big lead. I think Ohio State has two things that can help them against Bama. They can make big plays, and they have a mobile quarterback who can get out of trouble. So I think they've got a chance, but if they're going to win, they're going to have to score 42, 43, 44 points if they're going to have a chance.
I don't like either of these teams, so
yeah.
I'm going to be tuning in for a competitive game. If I see a competitive game, I'm going to stick with it. I don't know if it'll be the case tonight, but these things also last for like 5 hours.
Whew, it'll be the case. Don't worry. It'll be a solid four and a half hours, no question.
Hey, are we going to have any local basketball teams playing anytime soon?
I mean, Illinois is still playing. They're still going. I know the Mizzou's game against Vandy got moved, and right now the A&M game on the weekend is still on the schedule. We'll see about that. I got to believe the Billikens are getting close to getting back. We don't have any word. I mean, their game tomorrow night's been postponed, but we don't have anything on the game later in the week, the Saturday game, so I guess we'll see. But the Billikens have to be getting close because it's been 2 weeks now.
You would hope so, and
yeah.
I was just going to say, well, you don't know how a team is going to react after having difficulties like that. But just look to the Cleveland Browns, right?
Yeah, that's
because
fair.
maybe the conventional wisdom will be proven wrong. What do you got going on tonight on Sports Open Line?
Boy, all of this. We're going to talk about the national championship game and the NFL playoffs early. Got some baseball later on in the show too, and get some baseball stuff in the 7 o'clock hour with Kyle Schwarber signing in Washington, and some stuff related to the Cardinals that. I'm going to caution people not to believe everything you see reported. I guess that's kind of the way I'll tease it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there was a report over the weekend that
rumors,
they could be.
You mean?
Yeah, there was a report over the weekend from a really good reporter, by the way. Tim Brown from Yahoo Sports is really good. The Cardinals were named as one of six teams that could be a factor for free agent DJ LeMahieu. And, I mean, LeMahieu's looking for. Yeah, he's looking for like $25 million a year for 5 years. And I don't think the Cardinals are playing in that ballpark this offseason.
All right, well, we'll hear you tonight. And I think this is the new theme song for Sports Open Line, if I'm not mistaken.
Nope.
We can confirm it right now. Shania Twain, still the one. Kevin Wheeler, he's back at 4:15. We'll talk then. Thank you.
It's still the one that I...
Playback ready.
Now, the audio ready? Cut of the day.
All right, cut of the day, sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. Nancy Pelosi on 60 Minutes last night, talking about not only the insurrection, but some other stuff, and we'll get to that in a minute. But she did talk about the vice president, phone call to Vice President Pence.
Something else she and Senator Schumer did was call the vice president to urge him to initiate the 25th Amendment that provides procedures to remove a president from office.
We were kept on the line for 20 minutes. He was going to be here in a minute. Well, he never did.
They kept you on hold for 20 minutes?
At least. Of course, I was at home, so I was running the dishwasher, putting my clothes in the laundry. We're still waiting for him to return the call.
Now, that was kind of shocking, and, you know, we heard Nancy Pelosi's version of what happened last week, and that was all well and good, but I was a little surprised that Leslie Stahl, given the moment, actually pushed back on this topic.
What about the COVID relief package that was held up for 8 months?
No, but that was their obstruction. I understand this.
Well, wait.
Was there obstruction?
Yours, too.
Was there obstruction?
No. Yours, too. Takes
no,
two
it wasn't obstruction.
You held out for 8 months.
No, we held it up because there was no respect for our heroes, our state and local health care workers, police and fire, our first responders, our sanitation, transportation, food workers, our teachers. They would not go down that path.
There's a member of your caucus who said specifically that we look like obstructionists and it was a mistake.
Well, I don't remember anybody saying that, and they may have, but it isn't. It wasn't a mistake, and I would not, and nobody expects me to support something that solidifies injustice in our country.
I think that Leslie Stahl could have pushed a little bit there on that last point, but I do give her credit for at least going after Nancy Pelosi a little bit, a teensy tiny bit, given the moment, because that did surprise me a little bit, and I don't think her answer played very well. It was very clear that, yeah, they played obstructionist too. So one of the concerns I've heard from people in the aftermath of what happened last week is, where do you turn for accurate media coverage in 2021? I think that's a really, really valid question. I was watching some of the coverage on Wednesday night into Thursday on CNN, Fox, CBS, you name it. Everyone was preaching at me. It was hard to get information. That's what a talk show is all about, but news sources are hard to come by right now. But anyway, that's your audio cut of the day. 3:56, Total Information PM is coming up on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.